Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another Thursday edition of Roll Route, to the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. Susan Bradford, investigative journalist, once again rejoining us on a Thursday. How, Susan? I'm glad to see you're marking yourself safe post 3 minutes of darkness in the middle of the day.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, thank you so much for having me back. It's nice to see you again.
Did you go dark for 3 minutes, Susan?
You know what? To be honest with you, I didn't even pay attention to the eclipse. It kind of came and gone. And this morning, I reviewed the news. I know we were planning to talk about it, and it just was completely uneventful. It was hyped, and then just kind of came and went. So,
I mean, leading up to it, I was constantly asking people, why are 17 governors deeming this a declaration of an emergency disaster? It's like, what do I not know?
I suspect maybe something was planned for that day, but it never quite took off. Hmm. Or either that, or maybe they're trying to see how easy it is to manipulate the people.
Well, we do that twice a year, every year, just taking it into an hour off of the end of the day, put it on the beginning of the day and see if people will go along. And we do.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, the people are, I think a lot of people are waking up. And what was interesting, though, is I think that the religious right, anyways, was trying to tie in the eclipse with this new third temple, for example. We have Steve Bannon, who said he wanted to hold a prayer vigil because he thought the eclipse could usher in the new Satan. So I thought that was very interesting. And Steve Bannon is again kind of making the rounds. He thinks that we should get angry again. And he's hoping that we can have, while he's endorsing Robert F. Kennedy Jr., that we can have 100 years of MAGA rule, which to me translates into 100 years of crony government contracts for this group of people. So it's kind of interesting.
I don't want 10 days of some kind of rule. I want the will of the people to prevail.
We the people to prevail.
But I want you to, I don't pay attention to Steve Bannon. I think he's misleading. I have no respect for him. I personally met the man. I had a horrible feeling when I did. What I do want you to explain, because I don't pay attention to him, what's he mean, a new Satan? The old Satan wasn't good enough?
I think he's playing to Christian concerns, maybe that with this new era that the Antichrist will be ushered in. And so he is working very closely with the Vatican. In fact, he's spoken before the Vatican, and he's trying to launch a gladiator school in Rome. And the gladiator school is geared at protecting Western civilization. But the fact of the matter is that for centuries, the Vatican has kind of pitted the Muslims against Judeo-Christianity to kind of divide Europe as part of a divide and conquer strategy. And Bannon is part of the Catholic, Judeo-Christian part of that. In fact, while he was working for the Trump administration, one of his favorite books was The Camp of Saints, a book written about by a Catholic about how foreigners would take over Europe and essentially conquer the continent. And during the Trump administration, the dynamics that unfolded within Europe were almost identical to that book, as if they used that as a template. For example, one of the considerations was that these foreigners would force Europeans to surrender their homes. And we saw in Germany, for example, that the migrants took over German homes, and they were told that they would have to, give them up for the newcomers. So there were many kind of parallels with that book and what actually transpired during Europe, or during the Trump administration in Europe.
In fact, I talked to someone yesterday who has a home in New York, and they're scared to death that that's going to happen widespread. I mean, we hear reports of squatters coming in and taking over homes, but this individual who has a home in New York was very concerned that this is going to be commonplace.
It could be. And I think we're also seeing a strange development across the country where there are, these hundreds of ghost homes where they have been purchased, but nobody's living in them. So, what is the agenda behind that? Like that might be kind of interesting to look into.
You don't have a theory?
I guess my theory would be that potentially if China were to invade, these could be homes that would be given to the Chinese, or alternatively, given that we're combating international money laundering, maybe some of these elites are parking money into these homes and they're hoping to rent them out eventually. Like maybe they're an investment for foreign interests potentially, or hedge funds.
Well, this is not a rumor. Fact is, a guy named Zelensky has trillions of dollars. He needs his stuff somewhere, so maybe he's buying them all.
Yeah, that could be. We're seeing, like billions of dollars at a time go out the door to fight Ukraine and elsewhere. And somehow a lot of these oligarchs are getting richer in the process. So they have to park their money somewhere. And I know, at least in the case of the Russian oligarchs, real estate has been a favored investment for them, the go-to investment. So it could very well be that's where some of the money is going.
It's just amazing to me, Susan, how much, no matter where we go, we find some tie to evil getting back to the Vatican. Vatican is a source of a lot of evil, period.
It is unfortunately, because I think from the very beginning, it was established by the Black nobility and they wanted to conquer the world. I hope I have the timing correct. I think it was around the 12th century that they devised the concept of unum sanctum. And that was that the Vatican aspired to own all the property and own all the souls in the world. Like they wanted to serve as God's temporal authority on earth.
Well, they're still acting it out. It might have been the 12th century, but here we are now, and they're still trying to make it work.
They are. And I think one aspect of this that I find very worrying is the Third Temple. Do you know much about
No,
their efforts?
I know nothing about the Third Temple. I'm coming up to speed on red heifers, but I need some help on the Third Temple.
Okay. I think, as we may have discussed before, that politics is very closely intertwined with religion. So, according to the European elite, and there are some disputes about this, but Jesus had established the divine right to rule. So, in order to become a monarch, you would either have to profess like the bloodline or somehow be initiated into the school, into the proper Christian school. In the case of the Vatican, they claimed authority through Saint Peter. But eventually, the Rothschilds, and we can go into the history of this sometime, they controlled both of the Vatican and of the Christian monarchy, which was the seat of Christianity within Europe. In fact, the British monarchy was the defender of the faith. So with Israel, you're looking at the area where, of great religion, they want this new Antichrist to be of the seed of David, where the seed of David would be, again, you're looking at the Jesus bloodline and somebody who therefore has the God-given authority to rule the world, except that this Antichrist or their Christ figure is meant to be kind of a dictator who will have like temporal authority ruling the world from Israel. Israel, as we know, was founded by the Rothschilds. It's owned by the Rothschilds. Some say that the state was created illegitimately. For one, the Rothschilds breached the terms that were established with the Arabs. And they had also, that they were supposed to have concessions given to the Arabs that they reneged upon, and that the terms of the establishment were that Israel was going to be ruled by a Jewish temple instead of a Rothschild Knesset. So there are many kind of concerns about the legitimacy of Israel, but it's within Jerusalem that the Rothschilds would like to establish, the seat of the Antichrist, so that they have a God-given authority, in their own opinion, to rule the world. So that's kind of the basis of the building of the Third Temple. What they want, once that temple has been established on the Temple Mount, they then believe that they can bring in the Antichrist, who'll be one of their you know, their assets, who will then preside over all of humanity, you know, with the blessing and power of the Rothschilds.
And that is where we will pick it up when we come back with more Rural Route and Susan Bradford after this. Let's talk about the blessing of beef. Certified Piedmontese is a blessing to the consumer because you get a guaranteed tender supply of beef. No extra time needed in the processing of this. It's just tender thanks to the Piedmontese breed. And the best part of this deal, you don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. CPBeef.com is where you order. And there's more than one good thing about this. All the beef, 100%, comes from Great Plains cattlemen of the USA. Processed right here at home. You know, maybe even Brush, Colorado involved. That's how it all starts. It starts in the pasture. It ends up on your plate. Pasture to plate. CPBeef.com. Order it today. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce, investigative journalist, Susan Bradford. Susan, I have to first ask you a question that I got hung up on when you went by that, and I didn't want to interrupt because I wanted to get that all in about the Third Temple before the break. The bloodline of Jesus. So Jesus is the Son of God, mm-hmm. Immaculate Conception. How is there a bloodline tie to Jesus?
The Bible states in many passages that he was a direct descendant of King David. Mm-hmm. The notion of an Immaculate Conception was conceived at the Council of Nicaea 300 years later, after his death. And this was the Council of Nicaea was convened by the Emperor Constantine on behalf of the Vatican. It was used to shore up power for the Vatican. And it was there that they had conceived both the notion of the crucifixion and that, you know, he had died and risen again, and that he was of Immaculate Conception. And one of the reasons that they did this is that they were modeling the concept of Jesus after Buddha, and Jesus was inspired by Buddha. You know, there are books that have been written about how he traveled throughout India, and he was inspired by Buddhism. And so if you establish the notion that Jesus was conceived through Immaculate Conception and that he died on the cross, and there could be no bloodline. And so I don't know for sure that there's a bloodline, but there's been some dispute about it. But if there is a bloodline, it was likely passed on through France. And there is a story, it could be apocryphal, but there's a story that Mary had been approached by a French royal couple that said that they would pass on, that they would convert to Christianity as long as Mary could produce a child for them. And so it is, you know, reported, according to some, that she had delivered a child that was actually conceived through Jesus, and it could have been either Jesus or his brother or any number of other people, but that child was given to them and then therefore bred into the bloodline. The other story that has been used is that Jesus Barbaros, whom Jesus wanted to have spared, that this was a convict that I guess that Jesus wanted to have spared, and that by that was Jesus's way of signaling that he was actually a bloodline. But many royals dispute that it was Jesus Barbaros. If anything, it was the child that was delivered by way of Mary to the French royal couple.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, I don't know whether the bloodline is legitimate or not, but it's one that the royal families profess to have.
Whether it's a direct bloodline or not, whether you believe in the Immaculate Conception and the crucifixion or not, Jesus's words and his life certainly had a chosen group of people.
Correct.
And we know that Jerusalem and Israel is the chosen land. So all of that cannot be disputed. The facts along the way are certainly open for much interpretation, depending on the dialogue and who is sharing the information.
That's true. And I think whether or not Jesus was conceived through Immaculate Conception or whether he did, you know, die for our sins, I think his message is valid. You know, and has been proven through the test of time. He spoke the truth. He was the Son of God. And I've certainly am a testament to that. Like I have been a Christian my entire life. I believe that, you know, he did die for our sins and that he was conceived through Immaculate Conception. I've walked in faith since my childhood and I do to this day. And I think that his message is, it has been true for me, you know, throughout my life.
Yeah, mine as well. In fact, I was taught early on that I grew up in the United Church of Christ, you were too.
Actually, my grandfather founded the United Church of Christ.
Oh, well, that makes it even more interesting. But I was just taught that you don't question these things. And I think that's wrong. I think that you become stronger in your faith by asking the questions. And then once you answer those questions, you're much more convicted and much more assured in your faith in itself. And by asking the only reason you would not want to ask these questions if you were afraid you're going to be proven wrong. By asking the questions and affirming what you believed and what you have been told and been taught and what you read in the Bible only makes you stronger.
That is true. And I think Jesus and God, you know, Jesus is the word is the truth. And I think the only reason that some may be concerned about the actual truth is that the perception of Jesus and his legacy have political implications. So they could have political implications for the church and for this power structure that was established. So that's why, you know, the elites want to advance a specific narrative about his life.
So how much do you want to share about your grandfather and founding of the United Church of Christ? I mean, that's kind of like a big deal.
That's interesting. My grandfather was Judge William C. Dixon. He worked in the Truman administration, kind of breaking up the Zaibatsu cartel in Japan. And he was a leading antitrust attorney during his lifetime, prosecutor. So he prosecuted Standard Oil and a number of other companies before the U.S. Supreme Court. And what he had said is that these monopolists would receive a slap on the arm. Like in the case of Standard Oil, they were fined all of $1. And then they were prosecuted, that they went on the next day to continue as before. So he found that that there was a very, you know, he was very concerned that these these robber barons were allowed to advance unchecked by the federal government. But he wrote the founding constitution for the United Church of Christ. I'm a direct descendant of the Pilgrims through him and my grandmother. And the United Church of Christ was an amalgamation of the Congregational Anglican, and it was one of the Protestant religions, to unite the disparate denominations under the spiritual leadership of Jesus Christ. The spiritual unity in contrast with the Vatican, which is a material unity. So the spiritual unity under the leadership of Christ. And it was meant to be a spiritual complement to the United Nations. The United Nations that we thought in America was going to advance democracy, rule of law, Christian principles throughout the world. And the UCC was was a complement. It was meant to be a complement to that, to create unite the Christians under the spiritual leadership of Jesus, and also to help conserve resources. Because I think with so many different churches, you have to spend a lot of, you know, money, for different establishments and so forth. So the unity was in a way meant to conserve resources and also to complement the new UN system, which we did not know then to be nefarious.
Right. Oh, I'm sure when it was created, only the Rockefellers knew what the intent was. The rest of us were hoodwinked into believing that, oh, well, this is about world peace. We support world peace.
Correct. And we thought the United States was advancing democracy around the world as opposed to trying to secure natural resources and markets for this select group of people.
So now that I have a minute and a half and you've piqued my interest with the United Church of Christ, which my mother no longer is a member, that their church splintered off like so many others, but they splintered off 10 years ago instead of Kelly and I got married in the Methodist church and we've splintered off. And I'd like your take on how all of these denominations start with a pure cause. And then I think you just told us the answer through the politicization of Jesus and everything about the church, they ultimately lose their way and what their foundation principles were.
They do lose their way. In the case of the United Church of Christ, unfortunately, that church, like a lot of the other ecumenical denominations, ultimately answers now to the World Council of Churches. The World Council of Churches in the 1950s brought in the Russian Orthodox Church, which was controlled by the KGB. The KGB was advancing communism, so we now have communism being projected through the church via the pew. And I was very disturbed when I began to research the UCC and how it lost its way, that they are actually promoting Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky, a communist who dedicated his book to Lucifer. So Saul Alinsky is used as a reference manual for the UCC and other denominations now on how to agitate for change and social justice, which is a vehicle for communism, is now being portrayed as a Christian cause. It's actually the opposite.
Susan Bradford, we're halfway through Roll Routes. We'll be back with more after this. Let's talk about Greg Hager, spiritual change. That's maybe what Greg Hager is all about, spiritual levelness, keeping you rooted in what really matters for the future of this nation, but more importantly, as you, as an individual. Get more details about why I can say that so comfortably. If you listen to Greg Hager, and particularly if his wife Andrea's along, you'll understand it completely. It's all about remaining rooted so that we can keep our nations booted. That in itself is more than just a figurative speech. It's literal. Get details on how to order or get Greg to come to your event and do that at greghager.com. Welcome back, Roll Route, Trent Luce. Not sure what, Susan, you thought we were going to talk about today, but we've evolved into something that I think is vastly interesting because I'm just going to kind of repeat myself, but yet in a different way. Churches start, I mean, we could talk about the Vatican, we can talk about the UCC Church, we can talk about any denomination. They all seem to start with the right intent, but they ended up following Satan instead of Jesus. That's just a mind-boggling evolution of worship.
I don't think that it's being done at the congregational level. The level of the church.
I agree with you.
It's kind of established from the top down, and then these churches get co-opted. They get brought into the structure. I know that during the Bush administration, that the second Bush administration, that they the government transformed churches into government contractors. So it was then able to extend government public funds to those churches and then advance the communist agenda by way of contracts. So that could be to use the church to promote Obamacare or open borders or any number of these global causes that they want to see achieved. And then they're trying to claim some type of morality by stating that these values are actually Christian values, when it's the subversion and the corruption of Christian values that is being used, you know, to make their cause.
Well, first of all, I want to agree with you 100%, because if you look at the parallel of the structure of churches from the national level all the way down to the congregation and the people who show up in the pews, they don't comply with what's being taught. And until it filters down and we understand, like the Methodist Church promoting homosexuality, well, where in the Bible does that say that that's okay? And yet, so we had this whole splintering effect. But the parallel between the church from the national level to the grassroots people who make up the congregation across the country is exactly parallel to what's happening in the federal government. And those people out here who want to just do God's work to protect our families and do all of the things that we need to do at the local level, that separation and the parallel between the church and the government seems to be just spot on.
That's true. And they claim to speak for the church leaders at the national and the global level. They claim to speak for millions of Christians. But they actually don't. And in a similar vein, these politicians claim to represent the people, even though they're actually working against it and advancing an agenda that the people don't support. But I don't think they even care or listen to what the people want. If they do, they wouldn't be supporting the doctrine that they do, but they try to impose it from the top down, and then they claim some type of biblical authority by virtue of the political position they hold, or which position they hold within the bureaucracy, the wider bureaucracy.
So the answer is the same always, that we as individuals, we get louder about our belief and our faith and how we take back this country.
I think that's true, and also I think that even though the church has been corrupted, has become very corrupt, I think that God is very much alive in the hearts and minds of the individual church members.
I agree 100%. So we were headed towards the third temple. Did we finish that? No.
Well, I found some kind of interesting financial connections with the third temple that I thought I would share.
Okay. It
Okay,
always
so.
comes back to money.
It always comes back to money and also to the usual cast of characters. So the third temple, the notion of the third temple is being promoted by a group called the Temple Institute. The Temple Institute is supported by no less a billionaire by the name of Henry Sweco, and of course the Israeli government, which is owned by the Rothschilds. Sweco was the chief information a chief investment officer for Highbridge Capital Management, which is invested in alternative investments like cryptocurrency, which in my opinion is a scam. Sweco, ironically, was purchased by JP Morgan Chase, which acquired a 55% stake. And I don't know if you know the history of JP Morgan. JP Morgan bankrolled the Bolshevik Revolution, which killed tens of millions of people, including Jews, under the Rothschilds, when Rothschild controlled the Soviet Union under Stalin, which was allegedly one of their bloodlines. And then one of the investments of Highbridge is the Louise Dreyfus Corporation. The Louise Dreyfus Corporation is connected, that family is connected to Julia Louise Dreyfus, the actress who has starred in Seinfeld, which again, Seinfeld is one of the investors of Seinfeld is none other than Steve Bannon. And of course, we have the spin-off of Seinfeld is Curb Your Enthusiasm, in which John F. Kennedy Jr., his wife, appears as a star. Sweco had also worked for Merrill Lynch. Merrill Lynch has partnered with Bank of America, the bank that is in partnership with the World Economic Forum, that is advancing, the global agenda. He has also partnered with a gentleman by the name of Glenn Dubin. Glenn Dubin and Sweco founded the Dublin and Sweco group within E.F. Hutton. And just ironically, E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch were both identified in Senate hearings as being the leading brokerage firms involved in global money laundering, just coincidentally. And then Dublin was a founding board member of the Robin Hood Foundation. Among the board members was none other than Harvey Weinstein. And he also happens to have deep connections with Epstein. In fact, Epstein invested in the original his one of his founding firms for the hedge fund. He also Epstein was behind JP Morgan's acquisition of Dublin's group. He even dated Dublin's wife for a decade. And according to testimony, Ghislaine, against Ghislaine Maxwell, one of the Epstein's children, underage children, was directed to have relations with Dublin. Now, these are the people who are bringing forth the third temple that is being supported and advanced by the religious right, who have taken a very public stance against Jeffrey Epstein and against child trafficking. But the very interests that are financially behind it and are supporting this agenda are in fact connected to those very interests that would appear to be opposed to it.
That seems to be like a nice little tight circle.
It is. And I think unfortunately a lot of the groups that I've seen that tend to oppose pedophilia are actually the ones behind it, and we find that like the elites control all sides of these issues.
And the same people who are hollering every day, why don't you release the list of people in Epstein's book? Why don't you release it? Well, I think you just told us, Susan, in case you didn't know previously, the people who are going to fall is pretty significant.
Yeah, yes, the people who would fall are the very people who are kind of guiding this agenda, and,
right.
and they're also working with the federal government to dole out contracts. And I think a lot of both Republicans and Democrats want to receive those contracts in order to, you know, to get their cut as, you know, they move forth with what they're trying to do.
I want to go back to the J.P. Morgan financing the Bolshevik Revolution, because I've become a student of that period of time, mostly because the people did not go into servitude against their will. They voted. They said, I choose to live a life of comfort instead of fighting for my freedom. They literally just voted to say, and we're doing the same thing. We're doing the same thing in a different way. We don't realize that by taking government dollars, we are voting for servitude for our kids and our grandkids, and we just can't get enough of it. We're addicted to government payments and without asking the question, what's the repercussions of this addiction? And that's leading to the demise of our liberty, period.
It is. And I know within the Bolshevik Revolution, even though the people were promised a level of comfort, they found that they never received it. In fact, the poor who the revolution was fought, whose behalf the revolution was fought, they ended up having their farms seized, and they mm-hmm. were tremendously brutalized, you know, by these people in very cruel ways.
Yeah, so but they had a vision, or they were promised that you'll be able to take care of your farm and you'll just work for us, but you'll have all the comforts of your family life and take care of these things. And well, as you said, that didn't happen.
It didn't happen. It was, they were, I guess the Bolsheviks were virtue signaling to get the public support behind them. And they were doing this in order to basically, you know, seize the resources and assets of that country for themselves. So it was very self-serving, but it was cast in very noble rhetoric.
Yeah, and to prove that they didn't get enough of Lenin, they then jumped from Lenin to Stalin just to, you know, kill off a few more 10 million people.
And then we have Mao Zedong doing the same, and I think many of the dictators from the 20th century were created in the same mold.
And every single one of those dictators, and Hitler gets all of the attention. Hitler, he was a cruel beast in itself, but he did not do what these other individuals did. And they all did it in a very quiet, subtle way of just starving people in their own place.
Yeah, like the Ukraine, Holodomor. And I think it's interesting that our history books, even our schools, focus on Hitler, but then we never hear about all the tens of millions who died during the Russian Revolution, right? And how they were... how they were terrorized. And I think if the public did understand that, they, you know, I think that we might get a little closer to the truth, because a lot of these Bolsheviks were brought into the federal government in the 1970s, during the right after the Nixon administration, and they were placed within our political establishment. So we have like the same agenda being kind of played out again, which is very, you know, which is one of the key reasons why we need to understand what happened before so we can prevent it from happening again.
I often ask that question, Susan, is why is Hitler get so much attention? He killed 6 to 8 million, whatever the numbers may be. It's an atrocity. But we don't hear enough about Lenin, Stalin, Mao Zedong, or Mussolini, who all killed at minimum 10 times more. And who knows what the true numbers are. Mao Zedong, some say as many as 100 million people.
Wow.
One segment, Roll Route. Susan Bradford, it's left after this. Nitric oxide is not just an important element, it's essential. The difference is that you can get by with lower levels of some things, but nitric oxide and your nitrate in your cardiovascular system, you're not going to do well if you're short on nitrates. It's that simple. Your immune function is not going to work right. Your heart's not going to work right. So many cardiovascular problems are because people don't understand nitrates. And when I say people in this case, I'm talking about most of the medical profession, although Dr. Nathan Bryan tells me that after 18 years, folks are coming around to understand it all starts with the heart. Get details and order it. NO2U.com. NO2U.com. Trent is your coupon code. Welcome back, Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside Susan Bradford. And it's important that we have these discussions, because if we don't recognize the tyranny and the atrocities of the past and how they actually happened, Susan, we're destined to recreate them. And it seems as though, even though we can learn about them, we are working at recreating them. But it can all be stopped now if we stop allowing the destruction of the infrastructure of food and fuel in this country. That's really what it's about, and what motivates me to continue to dive into this and get people the facts.
That's true. And I think if the power did not reside with the people, the elites would not be spending so much time trying to convince us of their own merits. You know, while they're trying to, you know, seize our assets under a cover of virtue.
Yeah, I mean, that statement says it in itself. They're trying to seize our assets by telling us how much power they have. We have the power. Don't forfeit the power.
It was interesting that we created Russia through the Soviet Union. Well, the Russian Revolution was bankrolled in part by by Wall Street, and J.P. Morgan was a key investment firm within that revolution. And over the decades, the Christian communists were able to secure resecure their government for themselves. So the Bolsheviks and the more malicious communists were purged. They were placed in the prisons. And then during the Clinton administration, when we had an following the end of the Cold War, we had an opportunity to bring Russia into the fold of democratic nations. Instead, we engaged in shock therapy by way of Larry Summers, the economist, and that shock therapy shored up power once again within the hands of the old Bolsheviks and the oligarchs. So we created now the criminal class, this transnational crime syndicate that had been eradicated and that had disempowered. We created this new criminal class that is now advancing this kind of global money laundering, global drug trafficking, and international crime syndicate throughout the world. And I think these are the groups that are kind of insinuating themselves behind the governments and trying to advance their agenda behind seemingly duly elected politicians. There's so much money at stake that a lot of our contractors and so forth are thinking more in terms of their short-term advantage of how much they can get by serving contracts, rather than their own the interests of their nation and ultimately of their people.
I have to bring you back at this point and say, we can do a really good job identifying problems. What we need to spend as much time on is solutions. And I'm thinking about our conversation 2 weeks ago when we talked about repudiating the debt. And it's a great idea, but to be honest with you, Susan, I haven't done a darn thing working towards that end goal. We have to spend as much time on generating solutions and acting upon those as we do identifying the problems.
That's true. And I think that there is so much fraud and corruption that has been documented. I think if we get the right people and the right momentum behind us, we can bring what has transpired to light and thereby, I think, effectively challenge it. It might be through equity court, for example. And an equity court is I guess it's a type of court that is available within the government in which an attorney accredited by the bar cannot stand. So you, as an individual citizen, can bring your claims with truth through by way of affidavit, by way of contract law, common law, to that court and receive some type of resolution and relief. So there are channels available to us. I think that the public must educate themselves and then take the necessary steps.
Yeah, I think we need to do one entire program on common law. I think that's a great idea. Maybe next week. But I want to ask you something that we haven't talked about that is fundamental for where we're at with our power of the people. And that is, it is clear to me that not only is our election system hijacked, there's a concerted effort, and this is not a Democrat versus Republican statement. There's a concerted effort in all states, even the most believed to be the most conservative red states like South Dakota, where the powers that be are working at killing any momentum there is present to adjust the count, not the voting system itself, but the counting system, because it was Stalin who said, I don't care who votes, I care who counts the votes. And we have machines that do not have accountability, that do not have virus protection, that do not have the safeguards in place to protect them from pirates. If you've ever gotten a virus on your computer, you know that people can get through firewalls. Until we have an honest and fair election, all of this is going to continue to slide into the abyss. So from your experience and work into the election integrity concept, where do you see this going?
I know that the various efforts have been made to advance election integrity, but under that banner, they have these political parties that try to shore up votes for themselves. I think that if we have an issue with election integrity, that does lend itself to the fact that a lot of our elected officials have no credit, they have no authority to do what they're doing. And since they're taking measures in our name and drawing upon funds, which we're then obligated to pay, I think that there may be a way in for us to challenge what they're doing. They tended to tell us that we can voluntarily follow their legislation, because I think that they know that it lacks legitimacy. So perhaps it's up to us to challenge what they're doing. Because as you said, you know, the elections, if we don't have fair and honest elections, then what those politicians do as elected officials, I think would not really have any lawful weight, would it? Because they're not duly elected.
I mean, we have just basic people always talk about the machines. Oh, they're you can't tell me that the machines aren't manipulated. Okay, let's take South Dakota. And I'm using South Dakota as an example because I do not know of an effort in any state that's parallel, even comparable to what South Dakota canvassing is doing to get us to free, fair elections. Simple things like it's a state and federal law that the records, the physical paperwork must be kept for 22 months post any federal or state or local election. And I can show anybody the documentation on asking Freedom of Information Act request, county by county, in South Dakota. And they have not received one fulfillment of the Freedom of Information Act, which is a statute that says you have to have this information and make it available to people if they want it.
Why do you think they're not providing it?
That's what I want to know. That's why I'm looking at the investigative journalist to tell me.
I wish I knew. It does appear that the government isn't functioning as it should. You know, they're not fulfilling because the government is in place to provide you with services, and you pay taxes for those services. So if they're not providing that service, we have to question their legitimacy and whether they are, you know, properly fulfilling their mandates. That could be another area for exploration.
Yeah, here's the problem, Susan. We have so many. Everybody thought that all the land in the world has been discovered. There's no more place for any expeditions to occur. We got a lot of land that we need to cover yet. It's just not physical. It's what has happened and what we need to do to drive the ship going forward.
That's true. And I think that we also have hopefully a lot of patriots who are listening. And I think they can do their part on an individual level. You don't need an investigative journalist to file a FOIA report. You know, you as an individual, as a citizen, can do the same. I think anybody can file a FOIA report.
I would suggest anybody in any county listening who shares my sentiment that we must fix this election integrity thing, file a Freedom of Information Act on your 2022 election in your county and tell me what happens. I want to know. All right, Susan, we're at that time where we got 2 minutes. We're number one, so we don't run out of time. Where do we find your books?
Thank you. You can find my books on susanbradford.org. You can also connect to my Substack through that webpage.
And, you know, Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, if you value my work, I would always appreciate if you were to buy me a coffee. If you like, if you feel inspired to do so. But you can definitely find my books and my Substack through that webpage.
It totally depends on whether you like $1.89 coffee or $4.44.
I don't buy Starbucks.
Susan, take us home today. What do you want us to leave with and think about most?
I think we need to be careful who we follow and also to acquire discernment, because a lot of agendas are being advanced in the name of Christianity. And I think we need to look behind those agendas to see both to find out who are the financial sponsors, who's financing them, and where they're taking us. And you know, I think we need to look towards more of engaging locally as opposed to through these vast organizations like the Christian Right. Unfortunately, is trying to bring forth this temple, third temple, in the name of Christianity. And I think that they have a very an agenda that would actually harm Christians and their countries. So I'm hoping that. Hopefully, what we've discussed today, that the public will have acquired a bit more of discernment, so that they can be wiser constituents and followers and consumers of the news.
I don't think there's any advice that could ever be given better. Discernment is the quality that all of us need to sharpen in terms of our skills. Some of us just need to even add it to our repertoire, because we just buy into anything and everything that we hear. And if a sentence starts with "I heard," I usually check out, because you can hear a lot of things. Susan, always a pleasure. Look forward to what we're going to dig up for next week.
Okay, talk to you then.
We've successfully journeyed down the path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Susan Bradford, I'm Trent Lewis. Both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a rural route, not a third temple. If you need some repairs for Apache sprayers, then all roads should lead to one of the Simpson properties in Kansas or Nebraska. Quite frankly, if you're in Texas, we've got Chillicothe, Texas, one of the best meetings I've done with Apache and Simpson Farm Enterprises. It's all about service and reliability. In today's world, you cannot afford for your crop protection not to work. That's the moral of the story. You need it to work to protect you from bugs, to protect you from plants, and possibly to do a little application of nutrients back to the soil. Get full details about the promise made by Simpsons, simpsonfarm.com, full details online. If you're north of Nebraska, then you're going to want to get a hold of High Plains Apache, based in Mandan and Fargo. It's all about the Apache sprayers, getting the job done in the field. Keep track of those pests so you can brag about being the best.